I'm Anne Strainchamps, and this is To the Best of Our Knowledge. There are stories and legends as old as time of people who can become animals. Animals who can become people. Shapeshifters. Border crossers. Skinwalkers. And there is a lesson for our time in those stories, if we listen.
I think my favorite stories of all, if I had a totem story, would probably be the Selkie story.
Sharon Blackie is a writer, psychologist, and mythologist.
A Selkie is a seal who, in certain circumstances, usually once a month, under the light of the full moon, is capable of shedding her seal skin and transforming into a human woman. So they come to a beautiful beach under the full moon, they slip off their skins, they dance on the beach. But the story goes that there is a fisherman, a very lonely fisherman, hiding behind a rock, watching this going on. He steals the skin of one of the Selkies. She's forced to stay with him for 7 years. She bears his children. At the end of 7 years, she's desiccated. She's not meant to be on land. She asks him for her skin back. He will not give it to her. And in most of the stories, it is her daughter who finds the skin and gives it to the mother. And then the mother goes down to the beach, puts it on, and slips back into the sea, leaving her children and her husband behind. Our mythology here in the British Isles and Ireland is full of women who switch between human and animal form. And I think these shape-shifting stories tap into a longing that we often don't even know we have. And we feel that very deeply as sorrow.
What is that sense of longing? What do we feel that we've lost? As a psychologist, Sharon Blackie believes many of us suffer from a kind of inner emptiness, the result of living over-busy, over-civilized lives. Safe in our houses and offices, it's easy to forget that we're part of a larger living community, the natural world. And when people lose their relationship with the more-than-human world, bad things happen. That's one lesson you can take from shape-shifting myths and fairy tales. Luckily, Sharon Blackie says, they can also show you the way back. For example, in her most recent collection called Foxfire Wolfskin, she gives us a fiercer version of the Selkie story about a woman who's part wolf.
Well, I always felt very irritated, to be honest. Although I love the stories, I always felt really irritated at the end of the Selkie stories that the guy who'd stolen her skin just got off scot-free. You know, there were no consequences. I love a good consequence. And so, you know, if you look back at the very older stories, there are consequences. Mm-hmm. And so I rewrote that story so that the wolf woman didn't just, once she had regained her skin, didn't just vanish off into the forest. She ate her husband. Effectively. And then she vanished into the forest. And it's like, yeah, now that's a consequence I can live with.
Yeah, it's a very satisfying story to read. So when I think of old myths or tales involving people being transformed into animals, the first ones that come to my mind are the ones where it's kind of a form of punishment for the human. And then there are others in which being turned from an animal into a human is a form of rescue. So the princess kisses the frog, and lo and behold, he's a prince, or the beast is freed by beauty.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing. Generally speaking, those situations in which the human is punished by being turned into an animal, they're almost always men. And the stories in which the animal becomes human are almost always women.
Oh my, what do you make of that?
Well, do you know, I make of it the idea that way, way back from ancient Greek philosophy onwards, women have been associated with nature and men have been associated with the rational world and the intellectual world. And that has been seen as being superior. And so how do you punish a rational creature? By making him animal, by making him as bad as a woman. So I think there is an element of that in it, frankly.
But it seems to me that you're interested in myths or legends that express something different. Rather than the human fear of becoming an animal, it's more like our longing to escape human form, to be animal.
I think it's actually, from my perspective, an acknowledgement, certainly in our mythology in this part of the world, an acknowledgement that animals know some stuff that we don't and that that might be good. For example, in the Welsh tradition, I live in Wales now, we have this wonderful tradition of what are called the oldest animals. So when people are searching for the answer to a question, they might go to the elders of a particular village and they don't know. So they go to the next village along where the elders are a little bit more elder and they don't know. And so they say, oh, go to the oldest animals. And then they find the oldest animal, which is usually an eagle or a salmon, and they know. So there is this inbuilt recognition in our traditions that animals know something that we don't. And I think that's the place where a lot of these stories came from originally.
You know, I'm really fascinated by these stories about and legends about shape-shifting, but they do tend to come out of indigenous cultures with strong animistic traditions and cultures where people have lived in such a way that the membrane between the human and the non-human world is very thin. And so I wonder if they don't also represent a different way of thinking, not just about what's imaginary, but about what's real.
That's a very good point. Exactly. Because in these old traditions, the imaginal is as real as anything, if not more so. You know, you see this in the Sufi tradition, which is very wonderful, where they have a concept of a world which lies in between the physical world and the world of the intellect. And that world was called by a French scholar who studied these things, the mundus imaginalis, literally the imaginal world. And that imaginal world was just as real as the physical world and the world of the intellect. And the whole point of life was to engage with that imaginal world, because without that, you weren't really engaging in the deepest levels of reality. So I see that in our own tradition in this part of the world too. And to me, it's really very important that people recognize that, because we have such a tendency to look everywhere but our own traditions for that kind of wisdom. You know, here in Europe, we'll look to Native Americans or we'll look to the East and the Buddhists and the Taoists, but we have it here in our own land, in our own stories that showed the world just as animistic as any of those other traditions.
The other thing I wonder about the shape-shifting stories in particular, one of the things that fascinates me about them is that there's a kernel, a moment of transformation. That's what they all hinge on, this moment when human skin becomes furred or seal skin drops off and soft human skin is underneath. It's a metaphor for that transformation between two different levels of reality that we just can't figure out. Do you think that's why these stories feel sort of transgressive?
Yeah, I guess that's exactly why they feel transgressive. But they offer us a world in which really humans are fully enmeshed, where animals always have something to teach us. That's how our ancestors saw the world. And it was until the Enlightenment and the Age of Reason and the Age of Science came along, that was perfectly reasonable. That was how you lived. That was how you learned.
We should talk about another story. One of my favorites in the book is Foxfire, which is based on a Scandinavian legend of the Huldra. What is a Huldra?
The particular image of the Huldra that I loved in a particular Scandinavian story was a woman who was hollow. And when she turned around, she had a hollow back and a fox tail as well. And that's how you knew that she wasn't a real woman, that she probably had evil in mind if you met her in the wood, and therefore you should be very, very wary of her.
So tell us about your version.
I had, as my main character, a woman who had lost a child and who was desiccated, I suppose, to use the word we were using with the Selkie, who was mired in grief and had lost her relationship with her husband, had lost her relationship with herself, and went into the woods one day and found a fox and developed a, you know, the fox basically brought her back to life again. That sense of play, of pleasure, of joy in the world that a fox will have when you see it in the wild. Then one day her husband follows her because he doesn't know why she's sneaking out of the house at all hours of the day and night. And he sees the fox, and the fox turns into the beautiful young woman that the Holdra is. And of course, he is smitten. To cut that long story short, the woman goes to the hut where her husband has been having an affair with a Holdra fox lady and accuses her of being a Holdra. And the Holdra takes her to a corner of the hut where there is a long mirror and asks her to turn around with her back to the mirror and to look over her shoulder. And it is the woman who is hollow, not the fox woman.
There's a really beautiful passage. You don't have a copy of the book, do you?
I do have a copy of the book, yeah.
I really love the end of that.
So at the end of the story, the wife has not seen the fox woman for a very, very long time. And this is what she says. I am learning to become full again. The forest is showing me how. I go there each day, and I roll among the leaves on the damp, mossy floor. I burrow into root balls and talk to trees, and I am beginning to understand what they whisper to me in return. Yes, I go each day into the wildwood, and sometimes I catch a glimpse of red-gold fur through the trunks. Sometimes, waking in the dark of night, I hear a vixen screaming deep in the heart of the forest. I am glad that she is there, living her own wild life. I am glad that I knew her. I am glad for the hard lesson that she taught me. But I will not follow her again. Now I have my own wild-pawed path, and the power of the wood is remaking me. For when last I crept out to the cabin in the clearing and examined myself again in its mirror of truth, the hole at the heart of me was almost closed.
I love that so much. That passage tells us how to do what we've been talking about, and it's all about embodiment. She goes back into her body and back into her pleasure. Somehow there's just a powerful lesson in that, I think.
Yeah, and I think to me it was very much a sense of humans, other humans can't always fix us, that it really is sometimes just that immersion in the natural world and that sense of relationship and connection with other animals that can bring us back to that sense of embodiment that we have so badly, badly lost these days.
Sharon Blackie is a psychologist, writer, and teacher. She works with the myths and legends of her native British Isles. She's written two nonfiction books, If Women Rose Rooted and The Enchanted Life. And we were talking about her most recent story collection, Foxfire Wolfskin, Stories of Shape-Shifting Women.